back, we do deviate from the topic quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because no one gives a fuck.
Yeah. All
right. We're going to talk about season
2 today. Anyway, Pertwee's trousers. Have you seen them in this particular episode?
All right. Let's kick it off. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Casterbus. My name is Christian Corley. I'm joined this week by James McLean, and Brian Terranova is also here as well. And guys, we're recording this on June the 21st. It's probably going to go out a few weeks later, but I was really intrigued because June the 21st is the solstice, but that has absolutely nothing to do with the demons, which is set around Beltane, which is May the 1st. So we've got to completely forget about our idea of talking about the demons, and maybe we could talk about Doctor Who Series 2 from 2006 instead. But first, Brian Terranova, I have some kind words directed towards you, which I may seem unusual, so do gird yourself for this. Andy Walker commented on your Daphne Ashbrook interview when we published that, and he said, enjoyed the TV movie commentary. It was great to hear the return of Brian to the old team.
Nice.
So that's nice, isn't it? Yeah. So yeah. More of this is happening now.
And as you said, unusual.
Now. Yeah. Is it really?
It's unusual that someone would say something nice about me. Thank you.
Well, no one said anything nice about you on the podcast, apart from James and me, for 5 years. Because you've been on the podcast.
So you've been completely negative in the podcast, specifically about me for the past 5 years. Wow, thanks, Ben.
This that didn't come out right, did it? Anyway,
Back and re-listen to all of those.
Yeah, good luck with that. My God, some of those are a hell of a listen.
Oh, jeez, I imagine.
Especially during COVID. Good Lord.
I have no memory of them. Were they?
There's one episode where I'm stood in a queue for toilet roll for 6 hours.
Oh, jeez.
James doesn't know, and he's thinking, did we do that one?
I have no idea what you're saying. It's a joke, yeah?
It's a joke, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, we were, for some reason, right? You know how everyone else went hard on podcasts during the lockdowns?
Oh, we didn't do many.
No, we did one a month.
Oh, how weird.
Yeah, I know. It's like we basically do what we always do. We did the opposite to what everyone else is doing, which is why we're coming to season 2 after everyone else has talked about season 2. And we probably won't talk about season 2 for long, let's be honest. We've already talked about this, and we probably will end up talking about John Pertwee's trousers or something. Or other.
Yes, we will.
So I heard today about that poor girl who was in the original Lilo and Stitch movie, who did one of the voices. Who died. Now, I saw Lilo and Stitch at the cinema in 2002 when it came out. It took me a lot of time to work out where I lived in 2002 for me to have gone to the cinema to see, because I knew I'd seen it at the cinema. That's the key thing about this. Completely unlikely movie for me to see at the cinema, but I definitely saw it at the cinema. I have no idea why I was at the cinema watching it, or, crucially, who I was with. Not a clue. I have no idea. And, you know, at some point in my life, I knew who this was. And I've kind of authored out this other person. I've no idea who I was at the cinema with.
It's funny. I mean, that's definitely relatable. I've been thinking about that a lot lately as well, because I will sometimes find that I will edit other people into the memory.
Yeah.
And then have a conversation with them and like, no, that wasn't me. It's like, oh, it'd have to be. Who else would it be?
Well, I mean, I was just saying to Brian, Persons of Interest I was watching in the very last episode, could have sworn my memory of a couple of instances in it was absolutely different to what was there. I mean, the self-authoring, inadvertent or not, is just part of the way we work, isn't it? And I think I just wish if we were more aware of it, we'd actually be that we all take things so subjectively different, and that we exist in cycles of it as well. That self-authoring is a cultural thing as well. Like I'm seeing on Pinterest at the moment, people going, the prequels, bad. And they would say something like, no way, and be this AI image of the amazing things that happened in the Star Wars prequels, because now the hate is on the sequels and the prequels are now absolutely perfect. And part of that is the self-authoring of our own journeys. Part of it is just different generations as well getting into these things at different times. Mm. But at the time, the prequels were bad. Everyone said they were bad, and now they are good, and the new sequels are the bad, in the same way as we were saying last week, Christian, weren't we, that, you know, McCoy in 89 was bad, now good, now Gatwa is bad. Russell T. Davis has destroyed Doctor Who bad, in the same way that John Nathan Turner did bad back then, but no one talks about that badness anymore in the same way. We just go in these self-authoring cycles, these revisionisms of history, and a lot of it is just is to suit our own subjectivities. And our subjectivity at the moment for a lot of people is, I didn't enjoy Doctor Who over the last few years.
Therefore,
which is absolutely fine. Therefore, yeah, it's absolutely, it's bad, and I need to sort of evidence. And, you know, in 10 years' time, they might rewatch those and go, actually, they were all right. They weren't maybe the best thing, but maybe...
Well, do you know, just bringing it to Doctor Who, and not necessarily need to include Brian in this, but you are welcome to contribute. I was thinking about this, about what bit of Doctor Who I've enjoyed most over, the past 10 years. And because we're at 2026 now, so I can't include the 50th. And although I had big reservations about it, and I'm not a big fan of a key plot aspect of it, I think Flux was the most I've enjoyed Doctor Who over the past 10 years. Over the 60th stuff, and over the Shooter stuff, and over Jodie's other series. I think just that run of episodes, I think, because it tried to do something different, and it did do something different, and it felt fresh in a way that it somehow hadn't in the previous run of episodes or runs of episodes. So yeah, I would say that. So that's my that's just, you know, a Doctor Who related thing, but it's something I'd still think back on. I think I really enjoyed watching those episodes.
Yeah.
Do you have one, James?
Yeah.
No, I was going to say something, then Brian did this point. I thought something big was coming here, so I backed up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I got to say right there. Christian, I'm with you too. All right. No, I was going to say that there are two Jodie episodes that I actually really enjoy, and I like watching quite a bit, I found anyway. One of them is, I can't remember because she's got two, right? She's got Revolution and Resolution of the Daleks. Oh, right. I can't remember.
Yes.
But it's the one with John Barrowman. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember which one that is. But I really like that one. I thought that was really good. But also, and this one people don't like, apparently, which I don't get, but it's Eve of the Daleks. I love that one. I think that one was really cool because it was such a bottle story. I thought it was like such a cool concept and low stakes. Like it wasn't like, oh, the whole universe is in danger, the whole planet. It was great. Plus Aisling Bae, I love her. I think she's great anyway, but she was really good in the
episode. Is that the one in the warehouse?
Yes.
Yes, that's brilliant. Yeah, that's really good.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's really good. So yeah, I think out of the last 10 years, I mean, those were two standouts to me. I really enjoyed the both of those. Quite a bit. I really did the Eve of the Daleks probably more so. I really liked that one quite a bit.
Yeah.
James? I mean, I enjoyed Flux. We did at the time because we were reviewing it. Yeah. And we were quite pleasantly surprised. It felt like it was trying to do something different, not totally successful by the back end, but then we're also aware that there was issues at the time, which obviously made Flux more than it wanted to Flux. I can't stop thinking about fluxing now. I don't even know what fluxing is.
Weird flux.
The weird flux. But then I've liked some of the Gatwa stuff. Little bits, which I thought... there's moments where I could feel Russell T. Davis in there, where he used to make me go, yes, in, you know, 26, 27, you know, around season two or series two or whatever. I mean, while the Sutek thing was all a bit odd at the end, I really enjoyed the turn in that episode at the end where he leashes Sutek and just the music, the pace, the confidence in the actors. There's just a sense of Russell T. Davisness I loved in that. But yeah, but yes, there's been several Gatwoods, and the Tenant return, the return of Tenant. I thought, you know, especially the middle one, the one where they're set on the ship at the end of
Wild Blue Yonder. That was really good.
There was some absolutely great stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that this is what we always say. You're always going to find, this is what we were saying earlier, Brian, this week, or I was saying, because it's always me just talking ADHD style. Ultimately, I just think Doctor Who's always had good stuff. Through from 1963 to 2025, there's all the eras have had some good stuff in it. And all the eras have had some bad stuff in it. And it's just a term of personal authorship as to which you vibe with and you want to really embrace and which you perhaps push back. And
well, go, you know, maybe there is a thing that maybe isn't kind of... Because ultimately, you're switching on the TV and watching something. So there's this thing which is providing a service of entertainment and you expect to be entertained and you expect... When something's really entertained you, you expect it to really entertain you in the same way week on week on week on week on week on week. And it's simply not possible, is it? And you know, like the fantasy, you know, like in our heads, like the expectation and the desire for this is that it will be as good every single week. And when it's not, and when it does, and maybe it is, and you're just not in the right mood for it to be entertained in the same way it was the previous time. And when it's not, then it affects how you feel about that thing. You know, I was thinking about this in relation to soap operas earlier on, because my mum stopped watching Coronation Street for about 10 years and then just out of the blue started watching it again. She spent like 5 years going, these people are mad, I don't know why I watch this. Then she stopped watching it. Then she started watching it again about 10 years later. And it's a completely different show now, and Doctor Who's a completely different show now to what it was in 2006.
Well, let's take an example here.
Yeah, go on.
I'm just going to, out of the top of my head, just thinking about Series 2
okay.
of Doctor Who.
Good idea, 2006.
I remember just not liking it. You know, this is the golden era, which we're all meant to look back at and go, this is when Doctor Who was the most amazing thing. It was perfect. Unlike now with Disney, Gatwell, whatever, Whittaker, Capaldi even ruined the show, whatever, ever, ever, ever. But back then, to New Earth, I liked the look of it, but just didn't really like the story. I was kind of annoyed. Swap stories had been done before. Yeah, yeah. I wasn't very entertained. Tooth and Claw was beginning to really start to dislike the Doctor and Rose. I didn't like their vibe. I felt that they were trivializing what to me was a journey around the universe. You know, there was like this in-joke the two of them had, which was invariably we saw why, because that pays off at the end of this series. But I was like, what was after Tooth the Claw? Oh, was it the parallel unit? Was it Rise? Am I missing one? Age of Steel and Rise of Cybermen, was that 3 and 4?
No, you are missing one.
School Reunion?
Yes.
School Reunion. School Reunion I really enjoyed, not just because of Sarah Jane Smith. I just thought it was fun. It's great to see K-9 again. Anthony Pedd was absolutely brilliant in it, and it had a great music. It was fun. Oh, Girl in the Fireplace.
Girl in the Fireplace.
That was again, pretty good. I really enjoyed that because I was starting to find Rose really annoying, and she gets quite sidelined through that. So there's a bit of a catharsis in there.
Then I tell you what, I love Girl in the Fireplace. It's my favorite new series story, but I found online a lot of people don't like it.
And really?
I think the reason is you know, the God forbid that Rose should find a different side piece guy every adventure since she's met the Doctor. You know, Jack, Adam, she keeps Mickey on standby, even calls him for a booty call in Boomtown. Mm. But the second the Doctor might find somebody that he's also into, it's a terrible episode. It's a fantastic episode. I love Girl in the Fireplace.
But an odd reversal, isn't it? Because usually it's the other way around, where the mm-hmm. man can have loads of people on the side, but the sure. woman isn't. You know, Starship Troopers being a great example, Denise Richards having to have no love interest in the final cut because audiences didn't like her having moving on with her life and having a career. But anyway, yeah, okay. So you go Rise of the Cybermen, Age of Steel, I found very frustrating. I remember being really frustrated. I didn't like the idea of having a parallel Cybermen universe. At the time, to me, I felt like, I have my Cyberman universe. Why am I not doing that?
Considerable agreement with you, and I've just consulted this volume here. And I've just checked.
Did you think the same back then?
Well, I've just checked Brian's review of Girl in the Fireplace, mm-hmm. and he enjoyed it, definitely. He didn't enjoy it back then. But there's a piece just after Rise of the Cybermen, which I called My Rose Has Left Me, which starts with a quote from the Vic Reeves and Mortimer, Dermot Mulligan and Dermot O'Hare song, My Rose Has Left Me, I'm in a mood, she went to Kenya. We couldn't have children, that didn't stop us from trying. We were turned down for adoption because of her bizarre appearance. Oh, Rose, how we loved you, but where are you now? Alone with your salesman, you adulterous cow. Now, the point of that article was that I was completely dismayed by what had happened to Rose, and the character that was in series one was not the same character that was in series two. It was a completely different character. Now, you might say, well, this is advanced characterization. The Doctor's character has changed, and that has influenced the relationship and the confidence of the character. So maybe that's what's happened there. I don't buy that personally. I think she was a lot sweeter in the first series, and there isn't supposed to be that much time passed. But, yeah. I mean, I've got other things in this that are pretty much echoing what James is saying as well.
But that was the thing. I remember with Rise of Cybermen being really, really annoyed about how Mickey's treated in that first episode. You feel this guy is sidelined and almost bullied, which is an odd role reverse for him. Where in Rose, it's a suggestion he's a bit of an adulterous, bit of a dick, really. But by this point, he's there in this. They're having their fun conversations. They know he can't enter into, and they just in that opening scene, and that's fine. He's then goes his own way, and he just goes. The Doctor goes and follows the Rose, and even though he's saying to the Doctor at one point, like, you know, you go after her because that's all that matters to you, which seems to go against the whole point of the Doctor wanting to just love people. He seems to have now preferences. And yeah, there was just so much in that, which I really hated. Yeah, I imagine if I watched it now, I wouldn't find that quite as frustrating as I did when I first watched it then. I'd probably, yeah, because I suppose part of it is I know where it goes. So I'm more able to self-author it a little in a bit different way than when I did when I first watched it.
I recently rewatched series two myself and most of it. There's still one story I really don't rewatch that much, but really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. And I've always been very annoyed with that moment with Mickey because it felt, forget Rose. We got the point that she didn't want him to be there in the first place in school reunion, which apparently Stephen Moffat didn't know when he wrote The Girl in the Fireplace and made them all buddy buddy. And then you get back to Rise of the Cybermen and he's on the outs with them again, or he's the third wheel kind of thing. I never liked that. The reason for that is because it never seemed the Doctor to me, right? Yes. And the same thing with Jodie's doctor, when Graham tells her he has cancer and she just absolutely has no idea what the hell to say to him. And all I can picture is like the third or the first doctor, you know, like how consoling they were to their companions, you know, how like, I mean, look at the third doctor with Joe. I mean, she was terrified in, what was it, the Time Monster? And he tells her this whole story. Was it the Time Monster or was it the other one I watched, Carnival of Monsters? One or the other. But he tells her this whole story just to make her feel more at ease. I think it's the Time Monster. And, like, he's very conscious of the fact that she feels very uncomfortable and very afraid. And he helps calm her down and brings her down with this relatable story. Yet Jodie's doctor couldn't figure out what to say to a man who had cancer. And here, the 10th doctor, who's the one who invited Mickey to come twice now, the 9th and the 10th doctor, both invited him to come along, or accepted the invitation at the very least, and then just kind of like ignores the hell out of him. Even when he's like, I'm going to go after Rose. And he's like, well, what about me? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I can't think of everything. You know, like, yeah. It's like, you're so dismissive. So those are the moments I wasn't that keen on. The one counter though, I will say, is where you said Rose was a different character. They actually did address that in all the behind the scenes stuff. They said that Rose is, after traveling with the doctor, she is a little older, a little wiser. And they made that reflect in not only the character, but the clothing that she wore. If you notice, she wasn't just wearing like hoodies and jeans in series two. They made her be a little bit more grown up. So they were conscious of the fact that they changed the character. I don't disagree that it wasn't, you know, out of out of touch with the character, I guess, or it wasn't the best changes, but they did very sincerely know what they were doing there.
But it's,
and the
it's
last a, thing, go on.
Yeah, so no, go on. You've got a last thing.
The last thing I was going to say was Rise of the Cybermen. Have I ever told you guys my own personal theory, like something that I like about Rise of the Cybermen? We get, this is my own headcanon fan theory. I don't know if I've ever put this out into the world, so hopefully other people will like it as well. But we know that in the 10th planet, Mundas was touted as a twin to Earth that somehow drifted off into space, and then they brought it back and so on. And it was this twin planet of Earth. And I thought this is what Russell was doing. I thought I put it together, and then it was just never said. And I truly think it should be that way. But I think in all the parallel universes, there's Earth, and then there's sometimes Earth that gets called Mundas. And on these planets, you know, or maybe it even sometimes is just Earth, but on these planets, either the humans go, you know, it's a good idea, let's make ourselves cybernetic, or they don't. And what I think happened is, my own headcanon is that the original Mundas, where our Cybermen came from, Earth's twin planet in the 10th planet, it's a planet that drifted from its parallel universe into ours and became Earth's twin planet. I mean, it looks just like the Earth, right? But it's upside down. It looks like human inhabitants of it that turn themselves cybernetic. And they became our Cybermen. So when the Doctor and Rose and Mickey land in Rise of the Cybermen on that parallel Earth, and they're like, oh, it's happening, but it's happening on this Earth, right? Well, I thought it would have been such a cool twist at the end of the story to find out that that planet was called Mundas the whole time. Like, that version of Earth in that parallel universe is called Mundas. But even without the name, it still works for me. Like, the Cybermen always came from a parallel universe, an Earth that kind of failed itself, in essence. And that's why I really like Rise of the Cybermen, because it works for me in that headcanon, because the idea that Earth has a twin planet that just kind of drifted away, but like scientists never talk about the fact that Earth had a twin planet, is kind of like, okay, why did we do this? So I like the concept that it kind of just like some accident, some temporal event or whatever, popped it out of a parallel dimension, and they don't all do that, but this one did. So that's my little fan theory.
Self-authorship again.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Which is nice.
And we've all done that for years.
Yeah. But you can sort of see from the self-authorship, is if you were a big fan of Rose and the Doctor, which there was a big and still is of that period.
Absolutely.
I'm sure from your point of self-authorship, everything the Doctor kind of works and, you know, feels he's got his priorities right and he can look after himself. He's a big boy. I don't know. Is there a bit of that?
I will say there is a bit of that. I will say, like, there, I'm also annoyed. I'm very annoyed with how he treats Mickey. Now, mind you, we always had the Ninth Doctor kind of giving Mickey a hard time. But when he saw that he was worthwhile, he was like, you should come with us, you know? And I have a hard time picturing the Ninth Doctor just going, oh, whatever, you know, you can look after yourself. Like, I could picture his tough exterior saying it, but I can't picture him being that dismissive of it. So when I rewatch those eras, because I rewatched a lot of series 1 and 2, there are still certain things that I wish weren't the way that they were. But when I rewatch them, I still think that they're the best of the new series that we've gotten. You know, other people will disagree. I know a lot of fans came in the Moffat era, and that's their era, and that's their base for the show, and that's what they like. And some people just genuinely like that era, having been a fan from a long time as well. And I get that. Everybody's gonna fall where you fall. But when I watch it, I don't know how to describe this. Watching Russell's original era now gives me the same kind of great nostalgia feeling that I get when I watch the original show. I don't get that with any other new series, but when I watch that, I feel very much that this show is more a part of the original show than it is just the new series to me now. And I mean, maybe it's because we are 20 years on from it or so. And I do have memories of when I watched the first episode and so on, how I watched the first episode, where and who I was with and so on. But there is a bit of a, it's not a revisionist where like I just reconcile things that are there. There are still certain things that I'm like, I still wish they didn't do that part, you know?
Yeah, I don't have that. I must admit, I don't really I never go back to this new series. If I do go back, it'll be to the old series. And I think part of it is that still the same thing, though, Brian. There's a nostalgia and a connection there, which somehow didn't work with me with the new series. But yeah, so Age of Simon, I just say, where we got Idiot's Lantern. I was not overly impressed with Idiot's Lantern. It felt quite generic. It felt a bit of a missed opportunity. You've got The Impossible Planet, where suddenly things start to big up. I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. And The Satan's Pit, I really quite enjoyed. Impossible Planet was the best of the two. Again, the Dr. Rose thing is less frustrating there, but it's still... I just don't like them. I remember watching this series and going, I just do not like these characters. And after the Christmas Invasion, I was really keen to like David Tennant, but I just could not like the way that they played this. So you had those two, Love and Monsters, which we all have various
That's the one I can't watch. On. Yeah. I can't watch it. I will say it's like 50% good, 50% not to me. And the good parts are all of the parts with Jackie Tyler, because they really showed how hard it was for her to not have Rose with her and to not know where she's at and have Elton play off of her and see like how human he can be rather than this really bad caricature of a Doctor Who fan. You know, when he wasn't written as a really bad caricature of a Doctor Who fan, man, was it interesting? Was it good? But when they went down that path, God, I can't watch that episode.
You know, neither of us wanted to review it.
Oh, you and me?
Yeah. So
really?
Yeah. So somehow I managed to get Anthony Dry to review it.
Oh no! How did that go? I don't remember.
He was quite pleasant, positive, pleasant. He was diplomatic, uncharacteristically.
That's funny. I don't remember that.
I remember on the opening first watch being really frustrated by the Scooby-Doo running. You remember that in the opening?
Yep.
Bit in the two corridors. And again, very Russell T. Davis. It is all meant to be, it's not meant to be real at that point anyway, but I did struggle. I don't mind it. I preferred it to Fear Her, which to me didn't work really. Again, it felt very bland. I didn't particularly like Rose. The monster didn't quite work. The subtexts were quite powerful, but didn't quite work. And then you've got Army of Ghosts, which is kind of interesting. I still find Tennant doing the Ghostbusters chant cringeworthy to the extreme.
Yeah, that is. I don't like that part either. I agree.
Just still didn't like them. There's still some good moments. And then Doomsday is pretty good. It's got some good memorable bits, especially, you know, face off between the bros of Daleks and Cybermen. It's a bit of a laugh. And you have some really good music in there. But the point being is, as a series, to me, it was inherently flawed. And I imagine most series, if I went through every one of the series of Doctor Who from series one to series two again in Gatwa's period, I would probably find an ups and downs for every series. I don't think there'd be any that I would sort of say was absolutely magnificent and absolutely perfect. None that were totally terrible.
I remember at the time when series three came along, feeling it was just so much better and fresher, and it was doing something different. And, you know, obviously it was doing something different because it was bringing the Master back, and we didn't know about it very early on. And that you had a new companion. I liked Freema as well. I talked to her almost pretty much instantly. She was good, and she was interesting. She was quite a bit like Billy Piper in Rose. She was just... there was a little bit of energy about her, and that kept things moving along a bit. And then there's a different relationship between the Doctor and his new companion, so that made it fresh as well. They weren't a likeable couple, the 10th Doctor and Rose, by any means.
The same goes for Series 3, which I totally agree with you, Christian. I felt exactly the same. But I must admit, Smith and Jones, I didn't find particularly amazing or memorable. Shakespeare Code felt like it'd been done before for me. Gridlock, I really enjoyed. Daleks in Manhattan, Evolution of the Daleks. Everyone has an opinion on those two. Mine's mid.
I'm not keen on them, no.
Lazarus Experiment was utterly boring for me. I remember just being absolutely turned off by it. But 42, I thought was brilliant, loved it.
Oh, Human Nature. I love 42. Hold on, yes. Before you go further, do you know people don't like 42?
I know.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
I absolutely, the time, the pace, the doctor.
I mean, it's like almost universally. Yeah, I know. Everything is great. I don't understand that.
It'll be like Underworld in 30, 40 years' time. And everyone will be looking at it and thinking, this is amazing. Look at what they were doing.
But I can understand why people could have issues with Underworld at the time. I can't understand with 42. Yeah, yeah. What was wrong with it? It did everything it was intending to do perfectly. But anyway, you got 42, great. Human Nature and The Family of Blood were excellent and great adaptations. Really loved those. We've got Blink, which is great. Utopia, which is one of my favorites from the original series. But then you've got a lot of people have issues with The Sound of Drums and Last of the Time Lords. You know, again, you've got the ups and downs, which I think people forget when they start looking at the latest eras.
You know, I remember on first watch, I had an issue with Last of the Time Lords ending. But then after like watching it again, like time and time again, you know, like it, I don't anymore because the explanation was there how the doc, I mean, not how he rejuvenated himself in essence, I suppose, isn't there. But the answer is there, what he was trying to do, what Martha was trying to do and how it all came together. So I don't have an issue with that story anymore. As a matter of fact, I like that three-parter very much. Series three on the whole, I agree with Christian, is much stronger than two. However, when series two got an episode right, I think it's on par with series three. Those ones, I just think it had more clunkers than it had than series three had, for example. Series three, I forget which one. Shakespeare Code. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a bad story, but it doesn't really excite me, so I hardly watch it. But it's not a bad story. I do like Smith and Jones. As a matter of fact, I really enjoy watching that one. Blink is a really fun episode. Yeah, I remember really enjoying that episode, but I do not, with every ounce of who I am, I do not understand why people always say that it's the best one to introduce people to Doctor Who. It's like you know what?
People say that?
It always tops the list as like one of the best Doctor Who episodes. And it's like, I don't understand that, right? It's basically like saying Mission to the Unknown is the best place to start fans on classic Doctor Who. You know, the Doctor and the companions aren't there. It gives them everything they need to understand the show. You know, the Doctor and Martha are in it a little bit. But how is that an introductory story to Doctor Who? It's a terrible one as an introductory story to Doctor Who. It's good. It's a good story. But watching that, I feel more people would be like, this is wonderful. I want to see more of Sally and her friends.
Yeah.
Not give me more of the Doctor and Martha. Like, it doesn't.
Who's this guy on the TV? I don't like him.
Yeah. It's literally like everybody's always like, oh, would you start so-and-so on Blink? That's where I'd start. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't start. No, it's a good story. I'm looking forward to when they get there. But why would I start them there? That makes literally zero sense. You know, realistically, and a lot of people are upset by this, this 20 years of series two and the BBC are really like putting that out there, celebrating that. But where was the 20 years of series five last year? Right. Series one last year. Because that was 2005, 2025. And it's like, it's an absolutely great starting point. That is the one thing that I will give Russell is that series one did exactly what it was supposed to do. It captivated fans and non-fans alike. It's literally, quite literally the perfect starting place. Some people tell me that like series five with Matt Smith is also a great starting place. I don't really think it is. I think he's picking up on a lot of stuff there that's been left off, you know, like starting the Doctor straight after regeneration. Like, I think series one is literally the best starting place.
Oh, God, no, I'd agree. Yeah. And I think the series two thing, I think that was a strategic thing that recent events have decided isn't going to happen. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just looking at like the most recent series of Gatwa. And you've got Joy to the World, if we include the Christmas special, which I thought was actually really quite beautiful and really well done. Robot Revolution had a bit of a comic vibe, Dave Gibbons sort of vibe. It was all right. I quite enjoyed that. Lux was very bland, very much like what I would call a Shakespeare Code. It was fine, but just didn't do anything for me. The Well was excellent, kind of scary, midnight vibes, obviously, really good. Lucky Day, again, kind of interesting subtext about fascism and misinformation and post-truth. It was quite impressive. I didn't like it at first. Then when I realized what it was doing, it's like, okay, that's clever. Story in the Machine, the one with the barbershop. Again, that was a quite impressive. Not great end, but still pretty impressive. Instead of Song Contest, I think had a pace to it. Again, wasn't perfect, but was still all right. Wish World, no, didn't like Wish World. Thought it was a pain. And the last one, Reality War, was a mess as well. Ups and downs. I think you can find any series and you'll find the ups and downs. And so I do think in like 10 years' time for this era of Doctor Who will be looked back. And I think you will. I think we will find ones which are still not good and wouldn't watch. And there'll be ones which I think are worth watching. I find we're just so oddly revisionist and we just don't see the cycles. This is the 1989. Russell T. Davis is the John Nathan Turner.
Yeah. Which is bizarre because John Nathan Turner isn't the one who also made Doctor Who a success in the first place, right? Like Russell has that over him where he did make the show Matter of fact, I read this little snippet. Somebody posted this bit of an article where Russell had interviewed Verity Lambert.
Yes.
Or they were having a conversation or something. And he asked, you know, like, would you ever come back and produce Doctor Who again? And she said they asked her to, I think in the 90s. Mm. And she said, no, she's like, you shouldn't revisit the past. You shouldn't revisit where you come from. You know, like it just shouldn't be done. And people are like, Russell should have taken his own advice. And frankly, I have to agree. He really should. He should have taken her advice rather, excuse me, because if he didn't, who knows where the show would be, whoever came in after Chibnall, how the show would be. But I think Russell's legacy would not be tainted the way that it is. And
yeah.
I'm one of the voices out there. I'm trying. There's this one guy, he keeps contacting me quite a bit. And like, you know, can you believe Russell said this? And a lot of the things are like, okay, Russell didn't actually say that. Like, I'm not apologizing for Russell, but there is no video proof whatsoever that he said this. Like, the thing that you're saying is absolutely untrue, right? Like, find me proof, I'll believe it, okay? But it's like, I'm not going to completely slag off Russell for what has happened to the show now when I still very much enjoy what he did in 2005 onward. I think he did an amazing job bringing the show back. I'm always going to praise that, right? Same thing, I'm not the biggest fan of Stephen Moffat's era, as you guys know, but I love the episodes he wrote in Russell's era. I just said during this podcast, Girl in the Fireplace is my favorite new series episode, right? And he wrote that.
Yep.
I don't see a point. Everybody online is in this, okay, this bad thing happened, so now this person is bad forever. They're just this bad person forever. They can never be good again. And it's like, you guys got to chill. You got to relax. You know, like, you don't like that thing. Okay. You don't like that it means potentially the end of the show, or at least the end of the show as we know it. Fine, I get that. I have a friend who's very upset with what happened to the show. He hasn't been able to watch Doctor Who for a while, and I understand that. I took a break, but I've been watching a heck of a lot of it now. I don't know if that made it in the beginning, but James and I were talking. I've been watching a lot of it lately. But he's decided to like, I'm cutting, like, I'm classic show's the only thing I like now. I've cut off everything else. And I had to sit there and be like, dude, do you remember when I visited you? And this is like two, what was it? When was series four, 2008? I went to visit him in another state, and we all were hanging out. A whole group of us were hanging out one night, and it was part two. The Stolen Earth was airing. And we were like, shoot, we're not going to be home to watch this. Or it had just aired, or it had aired in England, but we were going to have to wait to watch it. That's what it was. And we were like, we don't think David Tennant's dead. We don't think that regeneration's final, but where's this going? We got to know. We drove around town with a laptop trying to find a place that had Wi-Fi where we could try, and yes, I'm going to say it, pirate the episode so that we could watch this episode, so that we could find out what happened, because that's how into that era we were as classic Doctor Who fans. And I had to sit here and remind that guy, do you remember when we drove around Vermont looking for a Wi-Fi spot in Vermont? Which, by the way, when I'm in Vermont, my cell phone worked in one town. Okay. One town. Anywhere else I went did not work. 2008. And we tried to find, we desperately tried to find that. And I had to drive, I think it was an 8-hour drive back home, not knowing what the heck happened, trying to avoid spoilers galore so that I could get home and watch this episode and find, because we failed. We utterly failed in our goal of, in our mission to try and find this episode. But I had to remind him, like, I know you're upset. I understand why you're upset. And I know what's upset me and so on. But I'm not going to write off the things that I do love because of these other things that I don't love. It just doesn't make sense. And if there's one thing anybody takes from this podcast that we're doing today, is that I hope you can all calm down and find your happy place again and realize that you love something about this show, right? Like James and I started this podcast talking about Star Wars, right? I grew up on the original trilogy. I love the original trilogy. I do not like 90% of the special editions. There are things that he did that I do like. Cloud City, man, that looks amazing, right? Mm. But there are things that I don't like. Han shot first, as everybody knows. Mm. But also the speeder going into Mos Eisley, where it just looks like a video game that they're driving into. It doesn't look like a real desert like they actually shot the film in. Anyway, my point is, I'm not going to hate those original movies all because the special editions exist. I'm not going to hate George Lucas forever. George Lucas made Indiana Jones and Star Wars. Like, give me a break. Yeah. The guy's a freaking genius. I don't like some things he did, but I'm not going to outcast somebody entirely for something that they did. I don't think we should here.
I would also sort of say that if you remember back, think about Series 2 again and Series 1 and thinking, our main way of understanding what people thought wasn't podcasts, it was message forums. Yeah. And the message forums were full of a lot of hatred for Series 1 and 2 for various reasons. Some we've explored ad infinitum. Others were about the master not being masterish enough, the lack of the Rani, probably. This isn't canon, or this doesn't do this. The books were not being respected. Now, if that had the issue that the new Doctor Who has got now, where we've got a massively saturated market with lots of different platforms, a lot of competition, people not watching broadcast television anymore, certainly kids not watching it, you've got viewing figures which don't look very good for that at all. If you had all those issues for those two series, there was a generation which was doing to that Russell T Davies era then, which was doing it now, but now they had the fortification of the proofs that it wasn't good because the viewing figures were down. While back in 2005, the proofs were against them because the viewing figures were rather nice and it was doing very well. And there was merchandise everywhere because kids were watching it, because kids were about. If we'd had that sort of same energy now, I don't think they would be saying the same thing about Gatwa's era and Russell T Davies. I don't think Russell T Davies would be like considered a god, but I don't think he'd be considered a pariah of Doctor Who. He'd be considered someone who has sustained it. So,
yeah.
And I suppose my takeaway here is just to remind ourselves that we go in cycles. And I'm sure a lot of the problem we have, or this new Gatwa's era has got, is that it just doesn't have the young people to fight for it. The people who've started Doctor Who for the first time with Gatwa and gone, this is my Doctor, and there are them out there. I love this. This is me. I want all. And they're not there in the same number because they're just not watching these shows anymore. So it has no support. While they were there for the Rose and stuff, and those who are against it, including myself, really started, learned to actually enjoy it, I suppose, in a weird way, than fight it. I don't know.
I think the big problem is, too, is that studios now, look what they did, right? Doctor Who goes to Disney. And I'm not going to sit here and I'm going to pretend Disney is the problem. I don't believe Disney was the problem. As much as people want to say they were, I don't believe they were. I think it was all down to Russell's writing. Yep. I think that's what it was. But it goes to Disney and they bring in the Hooniverse. What are we looking at there? We bring in Vader. There it is. Right? But we bring in the Hooniverse, and what did we get in this new era? One spinoff that happened pretty much after the show was dead in the water, right? It came out after the show was already, like, we all saw the, we'll call it out to tender coming, right? But the thing is, they had the perfect opportunity because everybody wants a franchise now. They don't want a show. They want a franchise. They don't want a movie. Library. They want a franchise. But Doctor Who did have that. And you know why I know that? Because Big Finish makes it so successful. They have so many spinoffs of Doctor Who that people lap up, right? And you can easily make a great franchise. I think things that they did wrong, and I'm going to say this, and you know, this isn't really like this isn't just like a nod, like, oh God, I don't like this. But I don't think the Doctor should have ever become a woman. And this isn't, oh God, I don't think the Doctor should be a woman. I don't think he should have been, because what they were trying to do was go, look, a woman can be the Doctor too. They had Romana, who was already a female version of the Doctor. She left to go do exactly what the Doctor did in eSpace. That should have been the start of your Hooniverse, a female Doctor, Romana, this character. You had a chance to have a character who was always a woman, doing the things the Doctor did, potentially being better than the Doctor, and that, you know, they, everybody could have their own character. You had this chance to build the universe up for these people. Just like Doctor Who was built up in the beginning, you can build it up better, right? I don't think we needed to change things. But where I'm going with this, real quick, because I know you want to cut in there, I'm sorry, but is that they want franchises and they want to keep making things for general audiences. It's why Stargate, just the new show that was coming out, just got canceled, because the studio didn't feel that it appealed to a more broad spectrum audience.
No one's interested in Egyptology, are they?
Well, right, you know, that's the thing, right? They keep trying to make the show bring in more viewers rather than we're doing great numbers. Let's respect the viewership we have. These people are great. Now, obviously, you can't survive if your fan base is always getting older and older and then disappearing. You do want to bring in new blood, right? You want to bring in new fans. And 2005 did that tremendously, right? But that, I think the problem is that so many projects are failing because everyone wants to bring in X amount of viewers, but you can't, certainly not with the way platforms are today. You know, you can't get X-Files at its peak had like 27 million viewers at a time. Yeah, you're not going to have that. You're going to get like, what was it? Stranger Things. I think the highest was like 6 or 8 million or something like that. You're not going to get 27 because it's a streaming platform and not everybody pays for it. But if it was on a network TV, or if Doctor Who was on the BBC, which was available to the entire nation, you can get higher viewers, you know, but they had to put it on an odd streaming platform and an odd times as well.
And this is the beautiful thing about self-authorship is that I remember when we first did the opening debut that went Jodie Whittaker, the unveiling Christian. I mean, both of us were kind of like, they shouldn't be doing this. I know mine was like, I just didn't believe that a male writer would write the Doctor as the Doctor being played by a woman actor, but would start making like Moffat-y sort of glib jokes about having breasts and things, which they proved totally wrong. And so I can now, as me, now self-author and read and go, yeah, I think it was the right thing to do. I obviously didn't work, just to find a new way of doing something that they'd already done.
In that regard, I would agree with that. But it's the age-old question about who is the right person to play a role. And sometimes you get it right and sometimes they get it wrong. And I'm not going to say they got it wrong with Jodie because they were looking for something completely different, weren't they? And I don't, you know, if you were going to stick to a line of men, male actors who had a particular level of, Ponty words like gravitas, but a sort of somewhere between John Pertwee and Patrick Troughton and Tom Baker-ness about them, then arguably by the time they got to Jodie, they'd all played the Doctor already, the ones that were working. So, a few years ago, you could point out a few people who might be good at playing the Doctor. They've all played the Doctor. It has to go in a different, they have to take a different spin on it, really, inevitably.
Yeah, and my thing isn't that they cast Jodie. My thing is just that I don't think the Doctor should have become a woman. I think they should have created a Doctor-like character. They already had two. They had Riversong, they had Romana. And I think that would have been a better way to go. But
why couldn't they have done both? Why could they have not? I mean, they could still have done a Romana series. I mean, I've still said they should have done a Master series. Why they've never done that? An anti-hero is crazy.
My thing basically is that I don't think the Doctor should have become a woman. Kind of like, you know, partially like Peter Davison said, the Doctor is kind of like this figure for young boys and so on. And it was a good figure, a good role model, rather than like, rather than the bad role model male figures that like womenize and so on like that, you have one that's actually a good role model, right? But then you have him become a woman, and then it's like, okay, well, is this woman only as great as she is because she's been a man for so long? Like it's this odd view of it.
It does have trouble with the scrutiny element.
Saying that, I do think Stephen Moffat not being the one to write her was the best call. I don't think he would have been the right person to write her at all. I think Chibnall did do a good job. I don't think she was my favorite doctor. I don't think she was a bad doctor. And I'm not saying that like I don't like that she exists. My point is just simply that I think the doctor should have stayed a male because that's what he's been for like 13 lives. And then bring us this other character that we can also enjoy. Because what it would have done, I'm not just saying it would have given women a character to like too. We would have liked her too. Like, I would have loved to have seen a series about Romana. You know, the doctor could have stayed who he is. Romana could have stayed who she is. And you could have had all these great stories where, you know, you introduce more characters to the lore. I just don't think we needed to change the doctor over to get that show when you had a built-in character that could have carried that show easily is my point. It happened and it's fine. And I like Jodie, but my point is, I think if they thought about it some more, they could have realized the whole Hooniverse thing sooner and done it a different way.
I think this
is my point.
I mean, obviously I don't totally agree, but I do agree with you that the franchise thing should have been thought of way. We could see where this was going.
Yes.
Back in 2016. Well,
I think everyone else had thought of it, hadn't they? Except the
film
BBC.
Franchise. Yeah, exactly. Everyone else was doing it.
Well, America, I mean, Big was Finish it. Was doing it at the time. Again, is my point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, we're going to have to wrap things up. We will be back with another chat soon. If you've any thoughts about any of this stuff, then there's a lot of it. So fire an email over to, because we really want to know what you think about these things. So let us know. And also that thing that James does with the music. We'll be back soon. Until next time, it's goodbye from me and them.